Okay, so good morning, everyone. I want to go over a couple of a few points with regard to really a perspective. It's I don't have any real conclusion to say, but I do want to offer a perspective about our lives now, I guess, you know, that now that we are experiencing what is clearly magepa, and I want to offer a perspective just about how to look at things, and also perspective about reactions that have occurred or that occur. And it's not an easy share to give. And it's probably not an easy share to hear. I have to tell you, I'm very uncomfortable. I really wanted to do this. I really responded to a request by Do Toplak. Had asked me to go over a couple of points. And I was okay doing that. I wanted to do it just sort of in a very, very limited way. But Moshe, my son, asked me if he would consider doing it on for the Sunday show. So there may be value. You'll judge that. I want to start off by saying like this, that a lot of times I've noticed, I mean, the reaction to the really horrific state that we find ourselves in now, across the world. So there are a lot of discussions and a lot of shiurim and a lot of perspectives. And in each discussion, I've listened to a number of them. I mean, in each discussion, so they have one thing in common. There is a to a degree there's a sort of a quest for knowledge, an attempt to try to explain something, or to put into perspective something with regard to what we're experiencing with the coronavirus, with COVID-19, and all of the really terrible after effects. So I want to start off this morning by pointing something out. And again, like I said, there's no real chidushim here, but so I do want to offer sort of a perspective. And there's an irony in what I'm doing, you'll see in a minute. I want to claim that there are two really distinct and different types of quests for knowledge. One quest for knowledge, one approach when trying to explain something. So one approach is a philosophical approach. And when I say philosophical, I mean, I don't mean necessarily going into the philosophy behind something. I mean by this, the philosophical approach in a quest for knowledge is that a person seeks to not to fit the external world and not to fit ideas or categories into one's own personal framework, but rather to seek to understand what's going on within an objective framework of knowledge. I'll be clear what I mean in a second when I juxtapose it with the other approach. There's another approach to quest for knowledge. And now I'll pull the psychological approach. The approach of an attempt to try to make sense of something. That psychological approach, I'd like to posit, is not really a search for objective knowledge. It's not really a search for, let me follow the clues to wherever they lead. Let me follow the evidence to wherever it leads with an unbiased, unprejudiced approach, but rather psychological quest for knowledge is really a quest for security. It's a certain type of an attempt to have power or control over a situation that a person deep down really knows that he or she doesn't really have so much power or control over. I mean by that as follows. A person who's confronted with a tragedy, with something that's just terrible, whether it's personal, whether it's, you know, sort of more universal. So very often we realize we're not in control, you know, like we can't change the reality beyond us. And that really tears at the core of a person because, it's very disturbing, very disruptive. So recognizing that you can't necessarily cure this or you can't necessarily affect in an external way what's going on is a sort of a substitute, for an attempt to gain control over the situation. And that is knowledge, it's seeking out knowledge, that if I know what's going on and I can make sense of it and I can see patterns and I can put it into a framework in which my mind is able to understand something, there is a degree of psychological satisfaction that I at least I have some degree of control as to what's going on over here. And I think it's very important to distinguish between a quest for knowledge that is based on a philosophical approach versus a quest for knowledge that's based upon a psychological approach. The quest for knowledge which is based upon a philosophical approach, so there's a fascinating Rambam in Hilchos Talmud Torah that I think that alludes to this. It's in Hilchos Talmud Torah, Perek Gimel, Halacha Tes. So the Rambam says like this, Divrei Torah Nimshalu Bamayim. You find in Sukkim, in the Navi, in Yeshaya, that Torah is compared, Divrei Torah compared to water. Shenemar, Hoy Kol Tzamei Luchu Lamayim. They don't know. So let everyone who is thirsty come and go to the water. So it's not talking about a literal thirst, and it's not talking about a literal water. It's a mashal. The Rambam says, what does it mean? What does it mean that Torah is compared to water? Lo malacha, to tell you, this teaches you, Mahamayim ain miskansin de makom midrum. Water doesn't gather on a slope. Right? It's a famous expression in English, right? Water seeks its own level. Elon yischalin me'ala. But rather it flows. It flows down from the slope. So miskansin de makom eshborin. And the water gathers in a puddle. In a still puddle in the lowest part of the ground. Kach divrei Torah, so too divrei Torah, eino nimtzayin v'gasei haruach. So you won't find Torah in someone who is haughty, v'gasei haruach. V'lo b'leiv kol dvaleiv. And you won't find it in the heart of someone who has a high heart. Okay, so it's a good question. What is the difference between gas ruach and dvar leiv? Not going to go into the details. It's really worth really analyzing every word over here. But rather, Ella, but the general sense, let's see if we can get Ella bidaka, but rather Torah is to be found in a person who is low, who is shval ruach, someone who is lowly of spirit. Shemis aveg ba'afa ragoy achachon. And he is someone who wrestles in the dust of the feet of the wise, of the sages. Umesir hatavos, this anuge hasman milipo. And it's to be found in a person who removes the desires and the temporal pleasures from his heart. Ram goes on into another area, which I'm not going to do now, but the point, well, what's the Rambam's point over there? What does it mean that Torah can be found only in the low of spirit? So it means that if a person approaches ideas, a person approaches Torah, which is a quest for knowledge, a quest for truth, and the person comes into it, into that quest with preconceived notions and preconceived categories that are based upon a reality or a sense of reality that this person sets up for himself or herself and tries to fit the knowledge into those preconceived notions, and instead of letting the knowledge talk to him and reorient his own or her own sense of what's true and what's not, what's real and what's not, but rather instead the person attempts to force the knowledge, the ideas into the preconceived notions. So that's not Torah. That's not the quest for Torah. And so I think it's important that when we talk about, you know, when we look at what's going on and we attempt to in our own minds, in a certain sense, to let's see if we can understand anything about this. Let's see if we can understand anything about this. So I think it's important to distinguish between two fundamentally and really diametrically opposed approaches. One is where the person, you know, is let go of any of the sense of self and lets the knowledge speak to the person. And the other is to take what's going on and fit it into preconceived notions. I think it's an important introduction to understanding this. I've heard shiurim and I've seen statements about people saying that this is a clear indication, what's going on now in the world is a clear indication that the Mashiach is coming. Now that may be. It may be that the Mashiach, I mean, hopefully, you know, it's, but the idea of saying that there's a pandemic in the world and that things are falling apart and that's a clear indication that Mashiach is coming, I think that's not a clear indication of anything of the sort. I mean, hopefully it's true, but just deducing that or inferring that from what's going on, I think is belongs to the idea of the psychological quest as opposed to the philosophical quest. I have no doubt that there were people in the Middle Ages that when the bubonic plague ripped across Europe and devastated a third of the population, tens of millions of people died. Stop and think about that for a second. Tens of millions of people died. So I have no doubt that there were people who were thinking to themselves, it's not saying, oh, it's clear that Mashiach's coming. And we know that, and this happened about 650 years ago, that that didn't happen. It's very important to stop and to differentiate between when a person tries to look at this from an understanding point of view, it's important to separate between the idea of, am I trying to fit this into some categories that I have in order to make sense of it, which will give me some type of psychological sense of security and control and power, or am I letting this speak to me? And so that's my introduction. The Rambam, of course, talks about this this phenomenon in Hilchos Taanyos, and all tragic phenomena at the very beginning. And he says a few things that are really amazing when you stop and look at it and think into it. He says like this. He goes into the first halacha is that the person, the mitzvah of Sefer Torah, to cry out and to blow the trumpet, the hatotzos, for any tzara that comes upon the tzibur. Okay. Kolomar called da, and he quotes the pasuk. Kolomar, and he explains the pasuk. Kol davar sheyid sheyatzei lachem kidan vatzores the dever the arbe the hayotzei b'hem. So we put here now into the category of the dever. So zaku aleihem zahariyah. Then he says like this, V'davar zemi darke ha-tshuvo. Doing this is derech ha-tshuva. Shebizman shetava tzara v'yizakula v'yariu, because when a tzara comes, and remember, he's talking about tzara al-tzivu now. So that's certainly the case here. So when this happens, and you cry out, and you blow the chatzotzos, yeidu ha-kol, everyone will know. Everyone will know very clearly that the tragedy has occurred because of Ma'aseyim Aron, because of Averos. Kakasuv, as it says, Avanoseichem hitu eila lachem. So, it's without the word lachem, is in the Pasuk in Yod, but Avanoseichem hitu eila. So, Zehu sheyigrom lahem lahasir hatzara me'alei. And this knowledge, knowing that the tragedy has occurred because of choices that we've made collectively in our lives, that will be the cause ultimately of the removal of the tragedy. Avalim lo yizaku v'lo yariu. But if people don't do this, Ela Yomru, but rather instead they'll say Davar Zeh Mimina Ga'olam Eiralanu, that this is occurring simply, it's a natural occurrence. The world of nature has things that we look at as being terrible tragedies. Droughts, earthquakes, disease, pestilence, right? So if a person still looks at this and says, this is simply the world of nature operating the way it operates. Vitzara zo nikra nikres, and it's a happenstance. It happens. It's the way the world of nature was built. It happens. Hare zo derech avzarius. And the Rambam says something that's really an amazing, amazing statement. He says that a person, if you do this, if you say this, so it's avzarius. Avzarius means it's mean. It's mean spirited. Azarius is the opposite of Rachmanis. When the Rambam talks in Hilchos Deos about different midos, so he juxtaposes Rachmanis with Azarius. So we have to understand that. What do you mean that it's mean? I mean, you could say it's foolish, you could say it's blind, but what does it mean that it's meanness? It's mean-spirited. We have to understand that. V'goremes lahem li'davek v'maseyem ha'rayim. That view causes people to cling to what they're doing, to the sin. The sosif atzara b'tzara z'chayos. And because of that, more tragedies are going to happen. And that's the tokacha. Who shekosav b'tzara v'halachtem imi b'keri. V'halachtem imachem b'chamas keri. Shalomar. So if you walk with me in happenstance, that means to say that if you say that this is just the world of nature, and that's it. So I will walk with you in happenstance. When I bring, listen to these words very carefully, when I bring, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, when I bring trouble, in order to prompt a tshuva, in Talmudshu Keri, if you say that this is just a happenstance, Osif Aleichem Chamas also Keri, then it's going to get worse. It's going to get worse. So we one time years ago, once gave a shiur on the tokacha in the context of Tisha B'Av, just on this point, how does it unfold? If you get a chance, you could listen to that shiur. I mean, I think the unfolding is an insight into how the onesh part of sakav onesh works. But what I want to go back for a second. What does it mean that it's avzarius? What does it mean that it's avzarius? So it's an interesting thing. There are two psukim in Mishlei that, in a certain sense, stand in opposition to each other, or they stand in juxtaposition to each other. Not that it's a stira, but they stand in juxtaposition to each other. One is Mishlei Perek Tes Pasuk Aleph. So the pasuk says like this: Chachmas Bansa Vesa Chatzma Mudea Shiva. So it means, with all forms of wisdom, did she build her house? She carved out seven pillars in this house. So the Mefarshim basically all say that the reference over here is that there are seven disciplines, there are seven areas in Chachma. And what they are is not for us, right now. But this is a reference, it's a mashal to the idea of knowledge, of knowledge. And then you take a look, and there's another pasuk in Mishlei, Perek Avav Pasuk Chafei. It says like this. It's talking about an enemy. Ki yichanin kolo, al ta'amen bo. Ki sheva to'evos v'libo. Okay, did I say what it is? It's Pasuk Chafav, Perek Chafav, Pasuk Chafei. So, it means like this. Even though your enemy's voice has chayin, it's ingratiating. Don't trust him. Don't listen to him. Why? Because sheva to'evos b'libo, because he has seven abominations in his heart. So you have a juxtaposition of seven pillars of wisdom and seven abominations in the enemy's heart. What does that mean? So there's a Mishnah in the Maseches Derech Eretz. Derech Eretz is one of the Maseches Ketanos. I think in the regular standard Shas, you can find it in the volume that has Avodah Zarah, in the Pirkei Avos, and other things. So the Mishnah in Maseches Derech Eretz is in Perek Hei Mishnah. And the Mishnah offers an explanation about how Avera operates. Based upon this pasuk, the second pasuk in Mishlei, and the Mishnah says like this: Trilas Avera Kiror Halev. The beginning of sin is Hiror Halev. So Hiror Halev is Hiror is thoughts is it means fantasy. Right? So a person is Maharir Hiror Avera. A person imagines in his psyche the benefit and the pleasure of, well, if I give into this taiva, so it'll be good. Shni Allah, the second after Hiror is Leitzanus. So Leitzanus means there's a derision, like making fun, like belittling things. And what does that mean? It means that the only way to maintain a fantasy is fantasy always winds up in opposition, is smacked in the face by reality. So the only way to maintain the fantasy is basically to belittle the reality, to explain it, to put it, you know, to this is not significant, this is not, it doesn't really mean anything to us. And then the third, Shlishis La, Gassus Arulach. So it's an interesting thing. The Mishnah says that a person can't really succeed in sinning unless he has a degree of gasus haruach. Well, what does it mean? So it means because a person who is shval ruach, a person who accepts reality and looks at reality and understands it is able to see. Okay, what is beneficial? What's really not beneficial, not trying to attempt to force anything into preconceived notions, like I said before in the introduction. But in order for a person to succeed in sinning, so you have to have some degree of self-centeredness. That reality is measured by the way I see it. Revius la Azarius. And that's what brought me to this Mishnah. So the after that is Azarius. So what does it mean, Azarius? So Azarius, one time I heard that it comes from Ach-Zar. Azarius, what does mean-spirited mean? Ach-Zar, it's only the other guy. It's only the other person, not me. Person who experiences Gassus HaRuach, by definition, they have to put down or be oblivious to a certain degree the needs of others, because when they come into conflict with his own, so then he has to make a choice. And there's an Azarius there. Hamishas la havtala nullifies what other people are the needs or the wants of others. It's just like it's bittle. It's just insignificant. Shishas la shinas chinam. It's amazing. Is after that, then the person, the only way a person can maintain that, you know, like is the self-centeredness is really by putting down everybody else. And then Shvi'is law in hara is jealousy over what other people have. Because if you view another person as being unfit, and I'm the center of everything, so then whatever he has, he doesn't deserve it. Really, that I deserve it. And that's where jealousy comes in. Husha Amar Shlomo, Yechanin Kolo Atamin Vok Yisheva Toevos Toliba. So what does it mean? So the juxtaposition I want to say is as follows. The world of Aveira is built basically on one thing. I mean, it branches out. That's the mission over here. But it's built upon a certain view that a person has. It starts off with a desire, and the desire would be held in check. The Yira Alev would be held in check as soon as it confronts, as soon as a person investigates and honestly weighs what's the benefit of this versus the loss, what's the cost benefit? Everything that a regular, like a businessman does, you know, what's the cost benefit? So I have to take a look and see. If a person were to do that and approach it objectively, basically it would stop right there. The involvement in Aver would stop. Or it certainly wouldn't be what it is in all of our lives, day after day. But what enables it to happen is a person builds up a certain sense of how he approaches the external reality. And that's what allows the Yira Alev to flourish, and that's it's the Gashmius HaRuach and all the other things. The Achzorius part of it means that a person, you look this Mishnah and say, well, where does Achzorius come in? It's in Asinam, you know, like, I'll sit in private, I'll do my own thing, and who cares? It's not relevant to anybody else. But the answer is that that the people are meant to live social lives. One of Aristotle's definitions of people, right? He said the human being is, one definition was a rational animal, and the other definition was a political animal. It means a social being. So the person has to take into account the idea of others, and he has to deal with that. So, and I maintain, I want to suggest that the juxtaposition of the two psukim and mishle means like this. What does it mean, sheva toevos belibo? So it means it's in contradistinction, it's in direct opposition to the seven pillars, the yesodos of chachma. It means that avera lies in an abandonment of knowledge. Avera lies in an abandonment of the philosophical search for truth, and it is encouraged, and it is enabled, and it is empowered by the psychological search, by the psychological quest. The Achzorius means that when a person in the journey, in the odyssey of Aveira, so the person confronts others, and the Rambam in Hilchos Tainius was talking about Tzara Shatar that comes upon the Tzibur. So a person's forced to be part, perforce, is part of the Tzibur, the tragedy is befalling the Tzibur. And if people say that it's Nikra, you know, Nikra Nikres, it's Keri, so that is a denial. That's not letting the reality talk to the person. That's a denial of the reality. And that's the Achzorius is that you're closing off, a person's closing off a path to tshuva, and he's affecting other people in so doing. Because of the circumstance of it, because we are, almost by definition, maybe even, yes, by definition, social beings. So by shutting down, by shutting off, or by intimidating this quest for knowledge, so a person is completely self-absorbed, completely self-absorbed. An interesting thing, the idea I'm about to say first dawned upon me when I was thinking back in the early 90s, and actually 1990 when the threat of the Scud missiles of Iraq was looming very, very large. And I remember that, this was 30 years ago, I remember that there were all kinds of, there were Shiurim and there were Tehillim groups and there were all kinds of, you know, reactions, and the whole focus was that we have to eliminate the threat. And it's just like, it's like today, the focus by and large, for the most part, is what can we do to eliminate the threat? And I'm not saying that shouldn't be the case, that people shouldn't focus on the elimination of the threat. I think it's vitally important to stay home, stay safe, flatten the curve, all the things that people are talking about, I think is very, very important. But the typical approach, it struck me that the typical approach was to focus on the removal of the tragedy. And to my mind, there's a great paradox in that. Because what do people, when they search for this idea of let's do anything we can to remove the tragedy? Well, daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please remove the tragedy. Please remove the tragedy. To what end? For what purpose? So it seems to me that the idea is let's remove the tragedy so that things can be what they used to be, what they were. And the paradox is that things, the way they used to were, is exactly what caused the tragedy. So the idea, if the message that we walk away from when facing that tzara is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please remove the tragedy, so we're doing nothing. In fact, I mean, in a certain sense, it's worse, because we're asking for a removal of something that the Rambam says was given, was done, was instituted, Kedei Shetashuvu. And we're saying, let's get rid of the message. Instead of saying, let's heed the message, and let's make a change in the way we're living our lives, so that memela, the tragedy, will be removed. The focus should be on what's the cause of the tragedy, not the tragedy. So the objective, to my mind, should not be the removal of the tragedy, per se, in and of itself. But rather, the idea should be to change our lifestyle, and the mail of the tragedy will be removed. But the objective is the change in the lifestyle. I would compare it to what the Rambam very famously says with regard to Shofar. So the Rambam says in Hilchos Tshuva, right, it's a very famous halakha that even though the shofar is the Gzeres HaKasuv, but there's a remez yeshal. But there is an allusion. There's an allusion. There's a hint in what the shofar means. And the Rambam says it's a wake up call. Yeah. It's halacha dalit. Alf tishat kiyah shofar rashon gzeres hakasuv remez yesh bo kolomar uru uru yishena mishinaschem rakitzu nirdamim mitardamaschem rechitzu b'maaseichem v'chizu b'tshuva v'zichru bora'achem. So wake up, you sleep. Wake up from your sleep. Arise, those who are in a deep slumber, and search your actions. And return in tshuva and remember your Creator. Who are these people who are sleeping? The ones who forget the truth. Amidst the vanities, the fantasies, the temporal fantasies. The shogun kol shenasam, the hevel varika shelo yoel v'lo yatsio. And they spend their whole year, all their time, he talks about the year because he's within the framework of the shofar, Rosh Hashanah. In fantasy and nothingness, which has no benefit and will not save them from anything. Abitul and Asha Seichem, look into your souls. Improve your way and your path. The yaz of Kalechem Mikem Dako Hara, Umachav Shavta Shalotoba. So, What the Rambam is saying here is like this. There are two different types of messages, so to speak, that God sends of Yahweh. when things aren't, you know, things aren't right. If things are, you know, if a person, the person's engaged in things that are not, not right, but the person's living, the people are living within a basic framework, within reach, so then there's a reminder, there's an alarm clock, is the shofar. And then when they are out of reach, so then the shofar isn't enough, is not sufficient. And you need a different wake-up call. And that's the tragedy. That's the tzara. Kedesha tashuvo. And we say by shofar, the pasuk, so we say, it's part of the Seder, you know, right before we blow the shofar. So we say, Ashrei ha'am yode'e surua. Hashem v'or panecha ya'alecha. So listening to shofar is not sufficient. You have to have knowledge. You have to be yodei seruah. There's a lot of thought that has to go into it. That's, again, is the philosophical approach to a tragedy as opposed to the psychological. And just like a person would never or should never, you know, listen to the alarm clock and hate the alarm clock and say, I have to do everything I can to remove the alarm clock, because I want to go back to sleep. I mean, I know that's a person's, like, you know, sort of lazy nature. But with regard to tshuva, so nobody would ever think such a thing. But yeah, when it comes to tzara, the immediate reaction is we have to get, do everything we can, storm the heavens, and get rid of this tragedy. I'm not saying the tragedy is a good thing per se. I'm saying that the tragedy serves an important positive purpose, which is the wake-up call. It's just it's the same as the shofar, except that we find ourselves in different circumstances where we're not within reach anymore, so we need a different type of wake-up call. And that brings me to a comment that I made, and this is what Dove had asked me, you know, he saw this and asked me to talk about this whole area based upon this. So I once heard from the Rav, that's how the Rav said like this. He said, how are we supposed to react to tragedy? So he said, you'll rarely ever find that the Nevi'im reacted to tragedy by saying Madua. But rather, said the Rav, they reacted, particularly David HaMelech, reacted to tragedy by saying Lama. Now, it sounds like it's the same thing. Lama, Madua, I mean, why? Why did this happen? In fact, if you look at Tanakh, so there are really two places, it's really kind of together, that where there was a question of Madua. Yirmiyahu poses the question of Madua. He puts it into people's mouths. So in Teret Yidimo Pasuk of Veis, so he says like this, the Pasuk says, If you say in your heart, Madua Kroni Ela, why did this happen to me? Why do these tragedies happen to me? So he gives the answer right away. The Rov Avonech is the Gomer. He says, you want to know why this happened? The Rov Avonech. And then the next parak. So then in parak Yudalit, Sukkim Yutes and Chaf, Hamaos Maastas Yehuda in Betzion Gala Nafshecha Madua Ikisano. God, have you been disgusted with the Jewish people, with Yehuda, Tzion? Why do you smite us this way? The Gomer. Yadanu Hashem Rishenu Avon Avosenu Kichatanu Lach. The Madua is answered right away by the Navi. There's no mystery there. But the Rav said, that's for a Navi to say. But how does every man react to tragedies? Not Madua, but Lama. And it's a subtle difference, he said. What's Lama? What's the difference between Lama and Madua? They both mean why. So the Rav said like this. Madua means why. Lama means, it's from Lema. For what? For what objective? For what purpose? Meaning, what can I take out of this? looking at tragedy, what can I take out of it? How can I benefit? What meaning can I put into my life? It's the philosophical approach, the quest for knowledge, not the psychological. That we have to investigate. Lima, as David HaMelech said in Tehillim, right? Keili, lama azavtani. So lima, you've abandoned me. Has to pun in lima. What benefit? Toward what can I now direct my life? Now that I've experienced the has to pun in. What objective? What can I take out of it? And if you look at the Rambam, so the Rambam in Hilchos Tainios, when he describes what is the Tainios, this day of Zaka and this day of Trua. So what do you do? So it's in Perek Aleph, Allah Yitzayim. B'chol yom Tainios shegoz in our tzibur b'mei atzoros. Anytime you have a Tainios tzibur because of tzorah, based in the Hazikanim Yoshim b'zeis HaKnesses. So based in, and is the Canaan. So what is that? It tells you right away. What are we doing? How do we react? So based in means we have to use judgment, and the Canaan means we have to use chachma. Yoshim Veis HaKnesses. So they sit in the communal, in the shul. It means the place of Kinos HaRabim. Ubodkin al Maisei Anshei Ha'ir. So they're bodek. They check. Okay? And then they remove the stumbling blocks, right? And umazhirin, the dorshin, the chokrim. They investigate and they check out. And then at the end is, and then they read the Torah. The whole approach is Bedika, Drisha, Chakira, and Limud. So what do we eliminate? So what do we have? We have to use Chachma. We have to use our wisdom. And we have to eliminate to look to shine a spotlight on our lives and to come out of that eliminate for what purpose? So, are we going to know for sure that this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu Havyachol had in mind? No, but that's not our responsibility. Our responsibility is lima, is to use the bedika, the drisha, the chakira, and the limud, to shine a light on sheva ta'evos shel avera, which stands in juxtaposition to get back to the world of the seven pillars of wisdom. So with that in mind, let's take a look for a couple minutes at the current tragedy that we have. It seems to me that there are five characteristics. And you can measure, you can look at the tragedy by seeing the thing itself and the results that emanate from it. So the thing itself is fascinating. I mean, the coronavirus is a minuscule, a microscopic germ. I mean, a virus, it's microscopic that has wrought havoc upon the whole world. I mean, but the first thing I just want to say is notice is the idea that it's not something that you can even see really, with the naked eye. You can't even see with a microscope. I think, I believe, it requires an electron microscope to see. So something so minuscule has, in effect, brought the world to its knees. So what is that? What does that mean? What's the significance of the idea that the dever that we're experiencing is a microscopic thing? So it reminds me of a Gemara, a very well known Gemara in Gittin. The Gemara in Gittin is on Daf Nunvav on the days, and it's the Gemara is about the Churban Beis Hamikdash. So Pitus was the one who It was the Roman general who came in and destroyed the Mikdash. And before the destruction of the Mikdash, he did really some abominable, disgusting, really abhorrent things. And I was fun in the middle of the Gemara. It's Amad Allah. So what he did was he came into the Mikdash and he took the parochas and he put the valuable vessels that were there, that were still there, that they weren't yet hidden. So that which was still above ground. So he gathered them together and he brought it back with him to go back to Rome. So we're going to come in the middle of the story here. So the Gemara was like this. Amar alav nafshol shebayam lotovo. So a hurricane. So he was on the ship. Right? If you're going from Eretz Yisrael to Rome, so yes, you go by boat. So he's on the ship and he's in the ocean. Amar alav nafshol shebayam lotovo. So there's a hurricane. A storm that came was going to drown the boat that he was on. So Amar, so Peter said, "Kiduma anisha elo kishelo kayam shel elu ein gurasso elabamayim." He says, "It seems to me that he saw the storm, right? He realized he was going to drown. So he says, "It seems to me that their God, the God of these people, of the Jews, his strength is only in the water. Why? Valparo, Shiva Bamayim. Because we look at Paro. How is Paro vanquished? So he was drowned. Basisra, Shiva Bamayim. So when Sisra came, so Sisra's army lost. They drowned at not, oh, sorry, hold on one second. Where did Sisra, I don't mean Sisra personally, but where was his army vanquished? So they drowned in Nachal Kishon. So now, Afu Amed Alay Latov Eini B'mayim. So now, the same God, he's gonna get rid of me by drowning me in the ocean here. His might extends only to the water. That's the mentality of the Oved Avodah Zarah. He sees patterns, and instead of looking at the idea behind the patterns, like what's essentially conceptual as opposed to what's superficially there, so he looks at the superficial, and he was convinced. So that's it. So that's the God of the Jews is like any. About a czar. That's what Titus said in his mind. He's limited. In Giborhu, God, if you're really strong and mighty, Yalele Abasha, come up, meet me on the land, V'yaseini Milchama, and battle me on the land, fight me on the land. Yotzva Basko V'amrlo. So Basko came out and said, Rasha ben Rasha, Ben Benoshal Esa Harasha. So he addressed him and he says, the Basko addresses him and says, you are a Russia whose father is a Russia, whose ancestor is a Russia. So it means to say, you're completely, your entire upbringing, your entire Mahus is steeped in Rishos. So you think you're so mighty? Birya Kala Yeshli Be'olami. I want you to know I have a small light creature in my world. The Yatushima. It's a gnat, a little insect, a little nothing. And then the Gemara says just as a side point, am I Karla Birya Kala? Why is it a Birya Kala? The Ma'alana Yisle Umatkana Lesla. Because it takes in nourishment but doesn't excrete anything. So it means the little that it takes in is all of it is necessary. Its energy source requires all of it to, it's so small, it's so insignificant, it requires everything to be able to make it function. Okay. Alalei Abasha, So the ship, I'm sorry. Aliyah Basha, so he gets up onto the land. The hurricane didn't drown the, didn't sink the ship. Vayatosh v'nichmas b'chotzmo. So a gnat came and it entered through his nostril. V'nikya v'mocho shevashanim. And it was, and it basically made its home in his head and lived for 7 years. And he can't, and he couldn't take it. It drove him crazy. And I'll skip a few lines, and then at the end, he died, but it was a slow and painful death. And Tanya Amar Rabbi Pinchas ben Aruva. So Pinchas ben Aruva said, "Ani Yisi ben Gedolei Romi. I was there amongst the noblemen of Rome." When he died, because he became the Caesar afterwards. When he died, Patras Mocho, so they did an autopsy. And they opened his head. Umatsubo Kitsipur Duror Mishkal Shnei Slime. So they found that the creature that was inside was big. So it was, the point is that, it was a slow and painful death. So what does it mean? It means from the, what is the Gemara saying? So the Gemara is saying like this. I mean, again, no big chidushim over here. The lesson wasn't simply for Titus. Wasn't simply for Titus. In fact, the Gemara goes on. I mean, the Titus are Rasha ben Benoshel Rasha. But the lesson was for everybody else who would see it. And in fact, Titus had a very famous relative whose Divrei Chachma we learn every week. He was the uncle of Unculus, Hagar. So, and the Gemara goes on to say that the Unculus, whatever this means, Unculus tried to contact him after he died and ask his opinion about Judaism. So, but it means like this. It means that the root of the Chorban is that the horribly exaggerated sense of self, and the lesson, the Midah Keneged Midah, the lesson that a person needs to take away from it is, so that the Tzarah comes, the Tzarah is microscopic, is nothing. I mean, it's and can bring the whole world down on its knees. So that's one idea. So the idea of the internal characteristic of coronavirus is the idea that something which is microscopic, which is able to just bring the world to a standstill. That's the internal part. The idea of addressing the ego of mankind. And then I think that there are four results. There are four things that we could look at. There's a great preoccupation now with science. Everybody's an expert. Everybody's become in very short term, everybody's become a scientist, a research scientist, a physician, nurse practitioner, everybody's an expert. People's relationship with science is, I mean, it's a fascinating thing, as a result of the tragedy. You see that there on the internet, there are just countless explanations and how you can understand the science behind it. Science is something. There's now sort of in a certain sense a preoccupation with science. And again, I'm going to suggest that there's a Midah Keneged Midah over here, that mankind should be preoccupied with science, but not in this way. See, there's a difference between science as a technological branch of knowledge versus science as a reflection of the Chachmas Haborim. And to the degree that people don't see in science the Chachmas Haborei, so And now the science is drawing people, but drawing people with you know, in an attempt to control the world, which is an elusive quest. It's an elusive quest. It's like playing the name of the there was an arcade game it used to be, right? Called Whack-a-Mole. You know, you have to hit the thing that came up. One would come up, you hit that, and then another one would come up in a different place. So the now people are predicting all kinds of I don't know if there's any validity to these predictions, you know, like a wave of pandemics. The relationship that people have with science is now using knowledge, the technology of science is using knowledge as a means of controlling the world. There's nothing wrong with using the technology of science, but the proper way, a proper vantage point of man's understanding of science is the technology should be an outgrowth, not the goal. The theoretical science and appreciation for Chachmas HaBorei is really at the heart of how people should be looking at science. And then of course there's the issue of the economy. So what is economy? Economy represents, it doesn't represent, it is people's sense of security. So there's money stashed away for a rainy day. Yeah, so with the economy, I'm able to buy and sell and barter, and you know, like, and I have security, I have a home, I have food. I'm going to say something that's going to sound like it's a joke, you know, but it's not such a joke. I have toilet paper. You know, like the economy represents in a person's mind an idea of security. And it's staggering to take a look at what's going on economically. It's staggering. The idea of security, again, is an individualistic and a societal search for the person's sense of self. The person's sense of self. And then the third external thing is the idea of the isolation. That because this is so easily communicable, so people now have to isolate. And again, the idea of social interaction provides people with a sense of, it's a different type of sense, a sense of security. It's what I would call, so it's not economic security, it's social or psychological security. The idea of the interaction, people draw strength from interaction with others. Isolation means you have to be removed. And it's interesting. I mean that we have technological tools, the internet and Zoom sessions and all these other kind of abilities to interact. I have the privilege of serving as the head of a school, and I get a chance every day to talk to teachers and students, and it fascinates me that there is, in one sense, a greater connectivity between people through the internet than existed before. And I ask people, so how are you doing with it? You know, how does it feel? And almost everybody, and maybe even everybody, has reacted when I asked that question. And so they react by saying it's horrible. They can't wait to get out and to interact in the old-fashioned way, so to speak. What does that mean? I mean, you can see somebody on a screen. You can talk to somebody on a screen. You can talk on the phone. You can write. It's not the same. Why? Because it's not a practical idea of being able to exchange thoughts and, you know, like with somebody. There's a psychological security that derives from social interaction that's missing now. And then the last thing that particularly focuses on the on Achenu Kol Beis Yisrael is how this has affected our practice of avoda. The school, the yeshivas are closed, and the shuls are closed. The way that we're forced to approach the avoda shebelev is completely mitigated. It is completely challenged. And why is that? I I would say that all five of these characteristics share one thing in common. And again, I said there's no chidushim over here. They share one thing in common, and that is the lifestyle of Avera that emanates from a person's or from people's over-exaggerated sense of self. The idea of the microscopic, like the Gemara in Gittin, the Beria Kala can bring down the ruler of the known world. That a microscopic particle can bring the entire world to its knees. It means that we have to re-examine the great sense in which we see ourselves, individually and collectively. The idea that we think that we can affect external reality and conquer things in an absolute manner by the way that we relate to knowledge and science, and it doesn't mean that we can't affect the external reality through our relationship to the technological science. We can. But the way we view our relationship to, you know, the knowledge is a tool for us to get what we want. So that's been severely put into question now. The economy, which is the commercial aspect of a sense of security. The isolation, which is the social aspect of the sense of security. And these senses of security, again, go to the idea of person lives in a certain world. A person and people live in a certain world, his own world, her own world, our own world, as opposed to living in the world. And this is a huge challenge to that sense. And then tefillah, so the Rosh Hashiva spoke about this last week. The idea of the way we approach avoda, you know, the true sense of avoda, avoda shebelev, real avoda shebelev means a person's undisturbed, absolute preoccupation in thought and subjugation to the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's avoda. And people unfortunately tend to view avoda exactly the opposite. That it's a means, it's a method for pushing buttons so that to get God to give me what I want. And I have to say, I mean, the idea of responding to tzara with prayer sessions, with tefillah sessions that look like, I have to apologize for saying this, I'm going to be a little bit blunt over here, with tefillah sessions and prayer sessions that look like they're formulaic incantations. Well, if you say these kapitlach of Tehillim in this order, so then that will make a difference in terms of removing the coronavirus. Or if you do this, going to people that represent the leaders, the gedolim of our generation, well, if you do this, you will not get sick. It is to my mind, and I'm going to say this really, l'shi ani azdaiti, is mind-boggling. And I apologize. I mean, I have to say it, you know, this is the way that I see it. I mean, the whole idea is the wake-up call is for a person, is for the tzibur and for individuals to use chachma in seeing how their own sense of self is a perversion. And so now to take tefillah and limud and to use it as a method of removing the tragedy so I can go back to the life that it was before is olam hafuch. I mean, it's a complete reversal of the whole idea. It's basically saying, you know what? I'm going to use some magical devices to make the chauffeur disappear. It's not only not dealing with the issue, it's reinforcing the issue. It's reinforcing the issue that brings about this. It's walking away. It's running away from Derech HaTshuva. So how do we combat it? So what's the message? The message of the shofar is Uru Uru Yishena Mishinaschem. What's the message of COVID-19? That lema. Again, nobody. You need a navi to be able to say, well, this is exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing. But that's not our responsibility. Anistaros la Hashem Elokeinu. Ve'haniglos lanu levaneinu v'gomer. So we can only deal with the nigla. So that's anistaros la Hashem. That's not our job. But madua, that's anistaros. Lema, that's us. That's our job. To be bodek v'choker v'dorish. So what is it? So it seems to me, the first thing is, I mean, in a word, it is humility. So what does that mean, humility? So I go back to how I introduced this. This is why I think the introduction was very important. What does it mean, humility? So humility means that nobody has to tell people, hey, you should spend some time reflecting upon this and thinking about it and giving meaning to it. Everybody's doing that. Really everybody, from the atheist to the most devout. So nobody has to tell somebody, hey, spend time thinking about this. The question is, what's the approach in the thought? So what does the humility mean? I don't mean, when I say humility, I do not mean bittul. I don't mean we are nothing. I don't mean that. That's a psychological reaction as well. That's a psychological reaction as well. The humility to say that, okay, I'm nothing. I'm a complete eiswarf, and I'm my existence is worth nothing. Is a psychological reaction. I mean, when I say humility, I mean the use of chachma. Humility means a person knows his or her place. It doesn't mean a denial of his or her place. It was Moshe Rabbeinu who wrote he committed that to writing, Al-Pi-Agura. It doesn't mean denial of self, it means knowledge of self. And knowledge of self means chachma. So it means recognizing that physical existence is subject to vicissitudes and subject to weakness that's by the smallest possible creature. Okay? It doesn't mean that physical existence is nothing. It means an approach to science that seen this interesting thing. You know, I've seen reactions to the whole coronavirus, you know, issue by people saying that science is everything, is one extreme, that we're only going to get through this by our knowledge of science, you know, by what we can do from what the CDC and the WHO and a whole bunch of other, you know, organizations tell us on one extreme. And then the other extreme is science is nothing. People don't know what they're talking about. There's only one thing. It's all in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Those are two extremes. Of course, everything's in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kaviyachol. But in me, by HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world of science, created the world of nature. It means our proper knowledge of science. Humility means an appreciation of Chachmas Habore. It means an engagement in the study of science. But not an engagement in the study of science merely as a tool to control the external world so that we can live in our internal world the way that we want. The economy, material goods. So it doesn't mean a denial of this physical world. As the Gemara says, that a person's absolutely nesadin for any pleasure that he should have partaken of and didn't. It's one shot in the reason for that the Nazir have to bring a korban. The economy, which means the person's engagement in this physical world. So we should enjoy the physical world, but for a purpose. And the purpose is to properly develop an equilibrium and an inner sense of self, to be able to pursue chachma, to be able to pursue Torah, to be able to help others. and the social security, the isolation. So the friendship with others, again, is not to advance our own selfish agenda, but it's to create a world, create an environment whereby people reinforce the proper objective, the proper purpose for living. Take a look at the Dor HaPlaga. So they weren't destroyed, but they were isolated. What does it mean they were isolated? They weren't isolated by a disease. They were isolated by a dispersion and by differentiation of culture. So we are meant to live together. We are meant to reinforce each other for a purpose. And if we're reinforcing each other for the wrong purpose, so then there's an isolation. And avodah. So the avodah is not our or my manipulating, as if this were in any imagination possible, you know, like manipulating forces to get what I want. That's avodah zarah. The idea of the avodah shebelev is a preoccupation to the exclusion of anything else. Shivisi Hashem lenegdi samid v'gomer. So there are five manifestations of one basic idea. The responses, if you take a look, the responses have been fascinating. I mean, so people miss shul, miss davening. So I've seen the people who are like creating, you know, like, okay, so let's create a virtual menu. We'll go on Zoom and we'll dive in together and we'll create some kind of, you know, some kind of virtual fila, quasi betzibur or something like that. It's an artificial response, and to my mind, and you could disagree with me. I mean, you know, to my mind, it's a perverted response. In fact, the tzara that we're in should give us pause and should give us cause to appreciate the true halakhic structures. If right now we're in a situation where we can't get together b'tzibur, we can't daven b'tzibur, so there's no going around that. There's no virtual Zoom minyan. It should give us cause to stop and to appreciate the true halakhic structure of b'tzibur. What's the real idea of a minyan? And what am I missing when we don't have that real idea? Not a feeble attempt to simulate what a minyan is based upon human imagination. You know, if you take a look at the Mishnah, take a look at the halacha. So the halacha has a whole set of halachas about how you mitzareif, how you count people in a minyan. What happens if you have a room that's like sort of divided into two? It's a big room, and then there's like an alley off the room. And you have 10 people, but not all 10 of them are in the big room, but they're like sort of, you know, in the little alley, which is off the room, even though they can see the other people in the room. Can it count for a minion? Can it not count for a minion? There's a whole discussion about this. Beautiful ideas behind what, how the halacha is structured. So rather than say, okay, we're going to have a Zoom, you know, quote unquote minion, people should have a Zoom shiur on what's the definition of a tzibur with regard to tefillah. And what are we missing in our lives now because of that? I'll tell you a very fascinating story. Not so well known, I don't think. A fascinating story. The Rav Zecher Tzadik Livracha, so he was the founder and the halachic authority of the Maimonides school in Brookline in Boston. It happened, I think it was in the late 60s or the early 70s. So there was a girl who in Maimonides, who wanted to wear tzitzis. She wanted to put on tzitzis and came to the teachers, and she told them, she was very respectful, she told them she wanted to put on tzitzis. So the teacher didn't know what to do. He said, let's talk to Rav Soloveitchik. Talk to the Rav. So they went to the Rav. And the Rav said to the girl like this, he said, I see you're very sincere about this, and let's try an experiment. For 30 days, I want you to wear this beged. And he got a beged of arba kantos, and three of the corners had tzitzios on them, had tzitzis on it, and one did not. Either it didn't do it altogether, or it was clearly puzzled, untied, or whatever it was. And he said, wear this for 30 days, don't miss a day, and then after the 30 days, you'll come back and we'll talk again. And she did it. And then 30 days later, she came back. And the Rav said, so no, how were the 30 days? And she said, it was amazing. I felt such a sense of holiness. I felt that, you know, it was, I can't wait to do, you know, to continue with, you know, with a complete set of tzitzis. So the Rav patiently explained to her, he said, for 30 days, with regard to the mitzvah tzitzis, for the past 30 days, you were doing nothing. It was equivalent to not wearing anything. It wasn't, you weren't wearing tzitzis. Tzitzis is a halachic entity. It's a halachic phenomenon. And if you say that by wearing this, which is halakhically insignificant, you felt a sense of spirituality and you felt a sense of, you know, of holiness, so then you're not relating properly to really to what tzitzis really are. So you need to take a step back and study and see what tzitzis really are. And then we could talk. And the truth is, that was the end of the, that was it. She didn't pursue it. The idea behind it is like this, that halacha is an amazingly majestic, beautiful structure. It is not meant to be a paradigm that is simulated with superficial ceremonial objects or actions. It has a reality. And its sanctity and its meaning derives from its reality. And so the idea that, so we're missing shul and we're missing school, and the answer is not to simulate something that has the trappings of what we imagine the halakha to be, but rather it should be delving into an investigation of the seven pillars of wisdom to see what it is that we're missing. And then to appreciate and understand what it is that we're experiencing now. So in summation, and I'll end with one other point, but the what we're experiencing now is analogous to the shofar. Approaching it from a psychological point of view, It enables us to keep on dreaming. It doesn't wake us up. The search for knowledge from the psychological vantage point is not a wake-up. The philosophical quest for knowledge, that is a wake-up. And that, of course, is going to dictate how we respond. I know that that many people have written and have given shiurim to offer Klal Yisrael and the world a sense of nechama. And I think Nechama is very important, but I think it's more important to understand what Nechama really means. Because there's a true definition of Nechama, and then there's a superficial definition of Nechama. Nechama means a change of perspective. That's what the Shoresh Nun Ches Mem means. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kavyachal looked at man and saw that man was completely perverted, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says in the Torah, Ki nichamti, ki asisi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kavyachal, regretted that he created man. So it means that there's a change of Kavyachal, it's a metaphor, change of perspective. Vayinochem Hashem in the Kriyas Torah Vayichal. So it means, again, kaviyachal, a change of perspective. Nechama, and I've been looking, I looked over Shabbos, I looked over the past few days at various writings of Nechama, of great Chachamim over the ages. When is it appropriate to offer Nechama? When a change of perspective is needed. So you have, for example, there's a famous letter that the Rambam's father, Rabbeinu Maimon HaDayan, wrote. It's called the Geras HaNechama. And the Rambam himself, the Geras Taiman, is in the Geras of Nechama. When is it proper to offer Nechama? So Nechama is when a person's world is shattered, or people's world is shattered, and because of the shattering, they can't function properly. So then you need Nechama to bring the person back, to let the person function properly. An Avel, the world of the Avel is shattered. And because the world of the Avel is shattered, because of the loss of the relative and because of the confrontation with death, which is a psychological shattering experience, not to mention the loss of the loved one. So from various points of view, the Avel experiences just the complete breakdown of the person's world. And because of that, the person can't function. So you can't function, you need Nechama. You need a change of perspective to be able to get back into the real world, the proper world. You know who else needs Nechama? And it's not used in that sense, because the connotation of Nechama is for a tragedy. But you know who else needs Nechama? A chasan and kala. So the gates in the Mikdash, in the Beis HaMikdash, so there was a gate for Avelim to go through and a gate for Chassanim to go through. Why? Because the extremes of the psychological mean that a person is going to have a severe challenge functioning in the real world, in the world of thought, in the world of ideas, in the world of truth. And so there's a period of Nechama, there's a period of, and Moshe Rabbeinu made both, right? It is 7 days, and it's a 7 day period, 7 days to get back into the world from this extreme, and 7 days to get back into the world from that extreme. So that's when Nechama is needed. To offer Nechama now to the world by talking about, don't worry, it'll be okay, is the world doesn't need that Nechama. The world needs a different type of Nechama. The world needs a Nechama of, let's acknowledge that what's happening now is a message, and it needs a different perspective, and let's investigate very carefully, thoroughly, and rationally what that perspective needs to be. To start talking now about apocalyptic visions and eschatological truths is completely, to my mind, completely, completely misplaced. And to say, don't worry, it's all going to work out for the good, I mean, that's for sure true. It is all going to work out for the good. But the good, you know, I wonder if the people say that, I wonder what they're thinking when they mean that. Yeah, I've called David Rahman al-Tava, but it's true. The bubonic plague also worked out for the good. So did World War I and World War II. Because kol da'avid rachmana l'tav of it, in an absolute metaphysical sense, it is the good. Hatsur tamin pa'alo, ki kol da'achav mishpat. She'el emuna ve'ein avel, tzadik v'yashar hu. I don't think people mean that when they say, don't worry, it's all going to work out for the good. I think they mean, don't worry, it's all going to work out the way you want it to work out. But that's not the message of Uru Yishayna Mishinaska. We should be talking now about introspection, individual and societal. And that gets me to my last point. What can one person do? Because who knows if is the world going to wake up as a whole en masse and change the way it thinks? It could happen. I mean, it could happen. I have to tell you, if you read Yonah, so it's not the the most obvious, most expected result that the owner walks into Ninve Ha'ir HaGedola, that are basically all non-Jews. And he walks into the middle of the city and he says, 40 days are by me of the Ninve Nefeches. So it's not the most obvious thing that the king, you know, that people will say, okay, we better completely turn around our entire society. But it happened. It's not impossible. But even if it doesn't, so what can one person do? So I remind you of two things. I mean, one is when Avram Avinu was Omei B'Tfilah Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Sodom, and Sodom meant five cities. So at the end of the tefillah, so if there are 10 tzaddikim, then everything will be saved. Why? But the overwhelming majority, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, who knows? You know, are all Rishayim Gemurim, but 10 tzaddikim, and everything will be saved? Because the 10 can influence, can make a difference in society. Because they can. And the Rambam in Perek Gimel, where he says that that every individual is there's a shekel, and every city there's a shekel, and kol olam kulo there's a shekel, and everybody should view him or herself as the tipping point, as the balancing point. That's a reality. That's true. That's true. I want to point out, and this is really well end, and if anybody has any questions, I'll be glad to try to address them if I can. There's a Mishnah in Avos, in Perek Beis, in the Kafka edition of the Rambam, it's Perek Beis Mishnah Yilches. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Ayom Katsar V'Hamlacha Merubah. So Rabbi Tarfon says, the day is short and the work is great. And the Mishnah continues. And the following Mishnah continues from that. Hu Aya Omer. It goes on even more than that. Rabbi Tarfon, you should know, lived in the time of Rabbi Akiva. It was at the end of Bayis Sheni and post Bayis Sheni. So it's approximately the year 100 CE. And remember his words, Rabbi Tarfon Omer Hayom Katsar V'Ham Lacham Ruba. 500 years before Rabbi Tarfon, at about 400 BCE, Hippocrates, the great Greek physician, lived and wrote a book of aphorisms. And Hippocrates' book of aphorisms opens up with the following. Says Hippocrates, life is short and the art is long. The Rambam wrote a perush on the Mishnah, and the Rambam wrote a perush on the aphorisms of Hippocrates. And it's the same mimer. It looks like it's the same mimer. Hippocrates says, life is short and the art is long. Rabbi Tarfon, Bahavdil, Rabbi Tarfon says, Hayom katsar v'am lacham ruba. The Rambam says like this. I'm reading to you now from the Rambam in the his commentary on Hippocrates. It is well known that short and long are adjunctive attributes. I mean, they're relative. If Hippocrates wants, by saying that life is short, if he wants to refer to the art of medicine, then his statement, the art is long, is a repetition that is unnecessary. And there's no difference between this and saying Zayid is shorter than Amir and saying Amir is taller than Zayid. So if he means life is short relative to the study of medicine, and the study of medicine is long relative to life, he was completely superfluous and he shouldn't have written it. But if he meant to say that the life of an individual is short in comparison to perfection in any science, and that the art of medicine is long in comparison to all the other arts, then this reiteration is useful. As if he says how far man is from being perfect in this art. And it is all of this is an urge to persist in it. That's his explanation of Hippocrates. Chachma bagoyim tamin. Torah bagoyim al tamin. what did Rabbi Tarfon do? And I'd like to suggest to Rabbi Tarfon, as well as the Chachmei Masor altogether, knew the works of the greatest physician up until that point. So he took that and he changed it. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Hayom Katzar V'Amlacham Ruba. Rabbi's same commentary from Hippocrates is relevant here, but he doesn't say that over here. He says something else. Because the Mishnah continues, V'Amlacham Ruba V'Apoalim Atzelim. V'Asachar Harbe U'Balabai Zochek. Who are you, Omer? Lo Alecha Kol Amlacha Ligmor V'Lo Atadim Chorin Libatel Libatel. Aval Im Lamadeta Torah Harbe. Notion Lakhasakar Harbor. It's not up to you to finish everything, but it's not up to you to absolve yourself from everything. If you learn Torah a lot, so you have a great, great benefit. I didn't say reward, I said benefit. V'neman hu bal malachtecha sheyishalem lecha schar tuvasecha. God is the boss. Is Naaman, he's trustworthy to give you your proper wages. The dasha matin scharn shall sadikim la'asad lava. It's not now. So the Rambam says, that's the Mishnah. The Rambam says, zel mashal al kotzer chayi ha'adam. A man's life is short. The rov halimud, the atzlus b'nei adam b'drishaso, al af ribui, he says, people's laziness and their search is even despite the fact that the benefit is great. In other words, look how powerful the Yetzirah is. That despite how great the benefit is, and despite the fact that people's lives are short and they should be cramming every moment in, but they're lazy. The al af ziruz haTorah, even though the Torah repeatedly warns, the tivuya al drishas hachachma v'alimud, talks about and commands to be involved in wisdom, but people are lazy. And yet, the reward, the benefit, the sachar comes, la'olam haba, v'adibarnu v'inyan olam haba v'asiri v'sanhedrin. Okay. What does it mean? It means like this. Hippocrates is talking about wisdom, the wisdom of science, of medicine. So life is short relative to perfection in all areas of knowledge. A person can live a whole lifetime, is never going to have perfection in all areas of knowledge. And medicine is the noblest of all of the physical sciences. That was Hippocrates' statement. I'm going to suggest that Rabbi Tarfon took that and again, Chachma Bagayim Tamim and Torah Bagayim Al Tamim. Rabbi Tarfon's statement is not a statement about Chachma. It's about the sciences. It's not a statement about physics. It's a statement about metaphysics. It's a statement about knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the idea is, and as the Rambam points out, that there is built into man a Yetzer, which draws him away. And the Rambam is saying that you should know that there is a way out. There's a shekel that you could do. And it's Chachma. It's Chachma HaTorah. And the whole thing is all about, sorry, one second. There is a way out. And that is the study of Chachma HaTorah. That's the just as a person could and should be preoccupied with his physical health, Hippocrates, even more so, a person should be preoccupied with his metaphysical health, Rabbi Tarfon. That's, but there's a challenge. The challenge is See, apparently the Yetzer with regard to the study of medicine is not, there's no Yetzirah, or much less Yetzirah. Because the person is very motivated, very self-motivated. Because the physical world is real to a person. But in the metaphysical world is not so simple. The person doesn't start off life seeing the reality of that world. So there's a Yetzer that goes against it. And Rabbi Tarfon modeled the idea to say that al achas kama v'chama, that there is a benefit to being preoccupied with the metaphysical health, and that's only through chachma. So I'll end with what I started. The chachma over here doesn't mean the manipulation of chachma for a psychological end. It means a person being shvaluach, a person recognizing the self and the self of society as well, and where that leads a person astray. This is a message. It's a wake up call. And there's a way to approach it lima that is incumbent upon all of us, and every single person can make a difference. Every single individual can make a difference. And lo lecham lachalig more, velo acha ben chorin liyvatel mimana. Liyvatel mimana. It's every person matters, and it matters in the context of course every person matters for himself, but even in the context of the whole society, every person can make a difference. And the idea now is really to investigate instead of creating magical charms, and instead of creating superficially simulated, shadows that appear to simulate halakha. If we engage in a deep introspection and a deep appreciation of the halakhic categories and what Torah tells us, and turn away from the self, so then even if the disease doesn't go away, we have benefited immensely. We've benefited tremendously, because the goal is not the elimination of the disease. The goal is the elimination of the cause that resulted in this disease. It's a perspective that I just wanted to be able to present about our current situation. All right, if anybody has any questions or comments, I'm happy to see if I could address them.
Hey, Zucker?
Rebbe.
Yeah.
Getting back to the Mishnah in Peretz, where the Mishnah describes the Tchilah Severa.
No, the Kalar about in Derech Eretz. Derech Eretz. Yeah.
Yeah. Is the Mishnah saying that all seven of those elements are necessarily present in all Averos, or is it describing a digression that basically that one leads to another?
But it's an interesting thing. Okay, it's a good question. The question is, the Mishnah in Derech Eretz, is it describing seven things that are present in all sin, or is it describing a progression? So I believe that the answer is closer to the side of progression, but I'll tell you what I mean by that, because there's one thing that caught my eye when I looked at that Mishnah, that it's interesting. Normally, when we think about a progression, so we think of step A leads to step B, step B leads to step C leads to step D, and so on. But over here, the Mishnah doesn't present it that way. It says, Tchilas Aveira Hirur Aleiv, and then it says, Shni Allah. Second to Hirur Aleiv is this. And then, Shlishis Law. Third to, it doesn't go back to the second one, right? In other words, the first one was here all late. The second one was late. The third one was Gassus Aruach. So it doesn't say that here are late leads to late Sonos and late Sonos leads to Gassus Aruach. It says here are late is first, and then second to it is late Sonos. And then third to it, the Hir HaLev is Gasparuach, and fourth to it is Azarius. So I think it means like this. I think, first of all, I think it's talking about Avera in general. I don't think it means necessarily every single Avera. I don't know if it means every single Avera. Because you have, for example, you have the Gemara that says that, I think it was Rabbi Lai, who said that if a person wants to sin, so he should change his garments and go to a different town. And the Mepharshim explained, the Rishonim say that if by doing that, a person will mitigate the opportunity, because when you're in your own town, so you have you feel a sense of security, and when you're feeling secure, it's much easier to sin. When you change your clothes and you become a wanderer, so it removes, it takes the wind out of the sail. But it's still possible at the end to sin. The person who sins under those circumstances, I don't know if such a person is going to experience all of those things, gasus harua, I'm not saying that. I do think that it's like, this is like sort of a paradigm. It's like a sort of a prototype. But I don't know if it's a progression that one leads to the other, but it is a progression in the sense that the fantasy is the root. And then what happens as a result of fantasy, in order for fantasy to be able to stay rooted, it requires, you know, certain characteristics that the person will have that ultimately are going to affect how he views other people, you know, his place in society. And it develops as a mechanism, as sort of a defense mechanism, to enable the hearer to stay, to take root and to stay, you know, to become, to manifest itself in the Maisa Avera. You know, you require other attitudinal shifts within the person. I think that's what the mission is saying. So I hope that, I don't know if that answers your question. I hope it did.
Yeah, no, just as a follow up to that, so going to the Rambam in Hilchos Tainus, he is saying that the avera of failing to heed the call of tshuva has the necessary element of achzaria, right? In other words,
right.
Yeah, okay.
That's why I brought it in. That's correct.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
Welcome. Somebody else had a question.
Yeah, I was on your general point that people need take the philosophical approach, not the psychological approach, and a change of perspective. The question, I guess, is what's bothering me is like, to some degree, you and us in the YBT community, like that's like how we are. I don't want to say predisposed, but before this coronavirus, that's kind of how we looked at things, or at least we tried to. And other, you know, groups of Jews or other people, they, you know, didn't have that perspective. They had the other framework of what you would call, like, looking at it more as a incantation, say these Tehillim, things like that. So it just seems like whenever you have this Sara, each group is going to interpret it in their framework that they had beforehand, you know? So how exactly, you know, Lama, like, what's this for? What's the purpose of it? How exactly are you, it's not going to take those Jews who looked at it as, you know, saying the order of Tehillim, and it's not going to, somehow they're going to open up and say it's all Chachma, and we're not going to say, oh, it's all about Tehillim. Maybe we're doing it wrong. Maybe it's not Chachma. Everybody's just going to keep their own framework. How exactly is the Sara really going to accomplish a change in perspective?
Okay, that's a rough one.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. The question is. So, how does this Torah accomplish, so to speak, its designed goal? People are going to continue to operate from within the framework in which they operate. So, I'll tell you. I'm going to respond to that in two ways. The first way is to say like this. I think that the way the question was formulated was, you know, like, so the Yeshiva B'nai Torah community, you know, has always operated from within the idea of the of the quest for knowledge from a philosophical framework. And so, like, what change? You know, what changes? And then anybody who doesn't operate that way, so like, you know, how are they gonna, what's gonna motivate them to, you know, to change? So I'm gonna address both sides of the question, really. So I can't speak for the whole yeshiva community. I can only speak for myself. So I will say like this. I noticed these type of, occurrences. For me, again, I'm going to stress this repeatedly. I can only speak for myself. These type of occurrences, for me, are a prompt to spend time thinking about this. And I will tell you that, for me, that while I am comfortable in the way, in the general approach that I view, in the general approach that I view the world as being, generally speaking, philosophical, the opportunity and the cause for introspection, in my case, for me, has led me to understand certain psychological phenomena within me that are not on the surface, that do not fit into that general picture. I mean to say that there's a big difference between and having an overall approach and generally operating that way versus, you know, having the opportunity to really scrutinize and see, like, in this area, is this what I'm doing? Is this how I'm doing it? And I have to tell you that upon looking, turning that spotlight inward, I will tell you, for me, I come up woefully short on where I thought that I was. So, I can't speak for anybody else. I will tell you that the impetus and the opportunity to shine a light on some of the inner recesses of my own psyche have revealed to me that there is a tremendous amount of work to be done. So again, I'm not commenting on anybody else. That's me. The second part of the question is, so my point is, I'm significantly questioning, challenging the premise behind the first part of your question. The second part of the question is like this. I mentioned Nineveh, you know, purposely. I mean, so if you look at the story of Nineveh, so the turning point comes in Perek Gimel. After the Dag, so, Vayehi Dvar Hashem El Yonah Shein Yisleim War. Kum. Leich el Nineveh ha'ir ha'gdola u'kira ileha esakriya asher anochi dover ilecha. So vayakam Yonah, vayelech el Nineveh kidvar Hashem, v'Nineveh ha'yus ha'ir gdola leilokim, malach shloshes yamin. Big city. Vayachel Yonah, so Yonah starts, he sets out, lavo vayir, malach yom echad. So he goes into the city a one-day walk, a one-day journey. To get from one end of the city to the other end of the city would take 3 days to walk. He goes in to one-third of the way in. So he's not exactly in the middle of the city, but he's well into the city. Vayikra, and he calls out, Vayomar. That is a man that they don't know. They don't know Yonah. Vayomar. Od arbayim yom, in 40 days, v'ninveh ne'epachas. Ninveh is going to be destroyed. And he didn't just say those, one, two, three, four, five words. In the Stama, he explained, you know, what's going on. Vaya, and that's an interesting thing. Vaya minu anshe ninveh ve'lokim. So it says, so they believed. So people people were affected by it, and they started to do tshuva. Vayiga hadavar el melech ninve, vayakam mikiso. So the king ultimately heard what was going on. He gets up from the throne, vayavir darto me'alav, and he takes his royal robes and he takes it off. Vaychasak vayeshev ala efer, and he puts on sackcloth and he sits on the ashes. Vayazek vayomer v'ninve mitam hamelach u'gdol of leimor ha'adam v'abeim abakav aton al yitam u'muma al yiru u'mayim al yishto. So the royal decree goes forth, and he ramps it up. They started. That their actions were the impetus for him, and then he like just completely overtakes it, you know, right? So the it's not the, like I said before, it's not the kind of thing that you would have expected this was going to happen. Ninveh, the Ir HaGedola of Goyim, and a Jewish prophet comes in, and he says 40 days Ninveh is going to fall apart, it's going to be destroyed, the mightiest city that there was, you know, and they do it. So, would you have expected it? Would you bet on it? I wouldn't. But it happened. So what does it mean? It means, and that's the Tochacha. The Tochacha says that these things are designed such that if you don't heed the proper call, so it gets worse. That's the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu built the world. So, is this going to get the message across? Hopefully. If it doesn't, it's only the you know, Bashikol Tamim Deos. We don't know how to judge whether it's effective or not. We just, like I said, Hanistara Slashem Alkeinu, Hanigros Lanul Vanenu Adola, the Gomer. So if it doesn't reach its objective, so Rachmanu Islan, so there's another wake up call. But how could it happen? So the answer is that I think like this. I mean, to answer your question directly, if it happens, how will it happen? So I think the answer is like this. I think two things are necessary. One is that the psyche, the collective psyche of people has to be jarred, has to be disturbed, and it is disturbed. So that's an attention getter. Then the next thing is a turning towards wisdom. Now that I'm going to agree with everything that you said, in the sense that people have a hard time doing themselves. That you see, like even in the case of Ninveh, so the people had an emotional reaction. They heard what Yonah said and it made an impression on them psychologically. But then it took the king, the political leader, to issue a decree in an organized fashion. The people need leadership to be able to make a difference, to be able to affect, you know, how they're looking at this and to turn towards wisdom. I agree, it's not going to happen on its own, or it's really unlikely that it's going to happen on its own. There is required leadership, and if you have knowledge, then it is incumbent upon you to step up and not impose leadership, but to act as a leader by drawing in a positive way, by drawing people and turning their attention towards wisdom. I'll tell you this. I had the opportunity to be involved on the inside. When this whole first thing, when this thing happened, when coronavirus, you know, when people started to look at it very differently and very seriously. So in New Jersey, I had the opportunity to observe on the inside what was going on and what the discussions were amongst the leadership of the, at least in New Jersey, the New Jersey community. And the New Jersey community, I believe, was the first community is certainly in the Northeast, maybe the United States, maybe the world. I don't know. You know, like the New Jersey community was the first to say, okay, we're shutting everything down. And I want you to know that was not a simple thing. And I will tell you that without going into any of the details, there was a chain of a series of events that led to it. If you looked at what was happening from the very beginning of the process, and you were, if you looked at what was happening and you had to make a prediction based upon what was happening, you never would have said that it was that it was going to result in people getting together and shutting down the schools and shutting down the schools. You never would have said that. And it was due to one person that affected things, that the dominoes fell in a chain, there was a series of a chain of events, and that's what happened. You should never, ever, ever despair of one person being able to make a difference and get people to look at things in a different way. Is it unlikely? Perhaps. Is it, you know, does it look like it's far-fetched? Perhaps. But it's within the realm of possibility, and to the degree that a person has knowledge, that person has responsibility to exercise leadership in a certain way to be able to get the message across. Not in an authoritarian way, because it's probably not going to be effective. You know, through any kind of compulsion, if that's in a practical sense impossible. But in a way that draws people in a, psychologically and philosophically and ideational. Is it difficult? Yes, it's difficult. But is it impossible? Absolutely not. Yeah.
What you described for yourself was realizing that there's a personal personality where the fundamental principles having found expression psychologically or in different applications that you had thought didn't work. But it was still assuming the basic framework which you have worked with until now.
Correct.
Part of the question that was asked was people coming from a different basic framework will then do the thing and say, we haven't applied our framework properly. What kind of event or what kind of process should lead us to consider whether the framework itself is an evaluator?
Yes. Okay. So Yaakov asked that just pointed out that in the question that was asked before about people who don't have the basic framework to look at things philosophically altogether, you know, there's a difference between that and between what I mentioned about myself, because I found in myself things that absolutely were sorely lacking and that really need serious work. But that came from a starting point, a framework of, you know, like a certain, you know, a philosophical, perspective. And so therefore, it's not, Yaakov's saying that perhaps it's not fair, you know, to make that comparison, but to use that as an answer, as an address to the question that was asked. It's a good point. I'm going to come back to the following. You know, this is not, in a certain sense, this is not all or nothing. And what I mean by that is like this. Do you think that when Yonah went into Nineveh and made his announcement and the people did tshuva and the king decreed and the decree was averted, that they all became philosophers? That's not what happened. It's not an all or nothing. And in the end, Ashur, you know, ultimately was destroyed. I mean, you know, it's not an all or nothing situation. The point behind it is like this, that there needs to be a wake up call. There is actually a wake up call. And now the question is, can people be attuned to the fact that this is a wake up call? And it doesn't have to be everybody. It could be 10. It could, you know, like, but what does it mean it could be 10? I'm referencing now the Saddam. It means that as long as there's a situation where society can be affected in a positive way, so then there's been a change in the course of history and, you know, and we can move from there. Does it mean that in the future, there, you know, again, like sort of chas v'shalom, does it mean in the future that there won't be a need for something like this or maybe even worse? We don't know. We don't know. But can we, as a world, can we sufficiently become focused on the idea that, you know, that this is a wake-up call and we need to do some introspection and we need to reset to some degree, I believe the answer is yes. And it can, and I would say likely would come from something psychological, but the psychological, it doesn't stop this. Psychological can be an impetus to focus on one philosophical point that can make all the difference. If you're asking me, you know, like, again, does it seem obvious or even likely that this is the path that we're on? And maybe perhaps not. But are all the ingredients there to enable it to happen? The answer is yes. And again, lo lachaham lachalig more. So we're not going to accomplish everything. But if we are some people who do have this knowledge, so then the lo ata bin chorin li
batel. I'm asking something else, which is, if we put it on ourselves, we shouldn't ask the same question on ourselves. Just like on Geneva, we're introduced to a system of thinking of one. And if it changed the whole framework, should one of the self evaluation be that what we think is this knowledge, what we think is this code, if it actually is the case? Because, for example, the code, you know, the tablets would say that the idea of code that we have is part of the problem, and that the thing is mismatch. And if you're not asking about what would affect other people, but asking about the process of choosing myself, what aspect of it should be, assuming the thing is because you have knowledge and you have, pretty easy to say the thing, like, trying to improve it, as you said, in terms of yourself, in terms of talking to other people, and to what degree should that energy be, checking to see if you, you know, if so, it's really a cost of choosing from, moving thoughtfully the framework of knowledge in terms of the basic framework itself.
Yes, I think that the Yaakov's follow-up question is the answer to what Yaakov's asking. He's asking, so leave aside for a minute everybody else, and just in terms of our own framework, like, what is the process of tshuva that should result from this tzara? What does it look like for somebody who already does have a basic overall philosophical framework? You know, like, so what does that process of tshuva look like for that person? So I would say like this. I think that there's a qualitative issue over here and there's a quantitative issue. You know, but again, just with regard to myself, I'll tell you that I see in myself an overall approach, which I think is, you know, healthy, which is good, but I see enough flaws that mean that while I may not be individually, I may not have a terminal disease in this regard, but I do have a very serious illness. And so the lima for me is maybe different from what the lima is for society. But I have to stress everybody's role within society, because man by nature is a social being. So when you work on yourself, it has an impact on people around you. And it's a hard thing to explain, and it's a hard thing to even describe. But to the degree that a person changes his or inner nature, there is an impact on people around. I'm going to leave it at that. But I would say, to Yaakov's point, in a chenami, it is possible that the overall message of the wake-up call wouldn't be necessary if everybody had the general philosophical approach, but just, you know, but was lacking seriously in a number of areas, as opposed to the overall general approach, the philosophical approach lacking altogether, then perhaps the world would not need that wake-up call. But that should never leave anybody with a feeling of complacency or satisfaction. And again, the lima is for everybody, collectively and individually.
Any other questions?
Rabbi?
Yeah.
I'm just curious. I mean, the ideas you're saying here are great. What was your reluctance giving a more public share on this?
I'll tell you. I mean, okay, so the question is, well, why did I start off by saying that I was reluctant? You know, like, this is the kind of, these are the kind of ideas I think that, like I said, I don't think there are any really great chidushim over here. I mean, you know, I think there are beautiful ideas. I don't think there's any really chidush over here. But why was I uncomfortable like this? Is in order for this to be effective, so, and for anybody, I think, to take any of these ideas to heart, so this is not, you know, okay, you listen to a shiur, you hear ideas. This is, you know, it's basically trying to convey a perspective. And convey a perspective requires the listener, while it's happening, and more importantly, after it's over, to, you know, to take those ideas that make sense. And I hope it all makes sense, but, you know, to evaluate, to weigh it in your own mind, and to see how does this apply to me? Practically speaking, what can I do? It really requires a dissection of the ideas and a dissection of the self. And that's not an easy thing to do. And so naturally there's a natural reluctance. There's a natural counterforce that develops. And in a small group, you know, with people that I know, like I have no idea who's on this call. You know, if it was a small group of people that I know that I've been, you know, learning together with for years, it's much easier to accomplish. It's difficult because it's difficult to accomplish the objective in a more sort of, you know, unfamiliar or unknown type of setting. I don't think it would cause any damage. Otherwise I wouldn't have done it. I mean, you know, but I think that, I hope that there's what to think about over here and to make a difference. But it's just not comfortable. I'm not saying that I had an opposition. If I had an opposition to doing it, I wouldn't have done it. I mean, Moshe asked me for a lot of things. I say yes to some and no to others. I mean, it's not, you know, if I thought it was a problem, I wouldn't have done it. But it's not the most comfortable thing to do.
All right.
Yeah.
You mentioned the people trying to get people to feel it on and close to the film, and instead of that, proposing people should focus on halacha, of people, et cetera. I understand that for the halacha part, what's the problem of using the film as a medium?
I missed the second half of what, Yaakov, stop. I missed the second half of what you're saying.
Yeah. Does that halakhically have the same parameters as normal for the keyboard? Because if not, if the purpose is tshuva through the people gathering together and being zoic and Hashem, why would that not be appropriate
for you? Well, okay. All right. So Yaakov asked, I mentioned before about the attempts to have a pseudo tzibur, you know, like in terms of davening and everything. So Yaakov pointed out, he said, like, is it in fact the case that tzibur, the meaning of tzibur in Hilchos Tainius, is the same as the meaning of tzibur in Hilchos Tefillah, and maybe from a kindness perspective, a virtual tzibur would not be inappropriate. You know, maybe it is a good idea. Maybe halakhically it fits, it works. So I think the answer to the question is like this. In a certain sense, you're right, but in a certain sense, not. What I mean by that is like this. In terms of the process of the Bedika, the Beis Din and the Zakenim. So it doesn't seem to me that that requires the idea of Tzibur in terms of Darvash and Bekdusha. It is nowhere that when the leadership is investigating the community and is Darish v'chokir and gives Musar and Mazhirin, the language of the Rambam is Mazhirin Esam. So there's nothing in there. The Rambam talks about doing it publicly, but publicly is that they didn't have, Zoom, right? So there's nothing about that lies in the idea of a Davar Shekedusha. That's true. And in that sense, that element of it, I would say, is absolutely correct. You're absolutely right. And it's fitting to be able to get together in that sense. And to communally, do an introspection and have leadership, a discussion, leadership, talking and really questioning, raising questions and for people to be able to contribute their views and discussing. And that I think that Drisha v'Chakira, I think 100% you're correct. But there is a halakhic phenomenon, let's say like Karin Batorah, Kriyas HaTorah. So Kriyas HaTorah, the timeless, is one of the things which it is a Davar Shebikdusha. And there's a beautiful idea of what Davar Shebikdusha is. I think I did it a few years ago at one of the Yortzeit Shiurim. So that idea of Davar Shebikdusha as expressed in what Tfilas HaTzibur is in terms of the Chazaras Hashatz and the Brachos and the way that the Rambam formulates everything in Hilchos Tainius, with regard to the Seder Tfila, the Seder HaTfila, Seder Avodas Hayom, of a tainus that is dependent upon the concept of Davar Shebikdusha. And once you're in the realm of Davar Shebikdusha, so you can start to clear Hakiris, you can start to say that if Chazal were around at the time of the internet, would they have formulated Hilchos Tainios differently from the way that they formulated Hilchos Tfila? I don't know. I'm not even going to attempt to speculate such a thing. I will say that, again, that once something occupies a place in the halakhic corpus, for example, in terms of Davar Shebikdusha, so it would behoove, and we can't do it, and Zoom does not accomplish it, so it would behoove us to, I'm sorry. Once we investigate and see that something does require Davar Shebikdusha, and we see that the internet does not accomplish it, and we understand that, what the place is of the concept of Davar Shebikdusha within these halachas of Tfila and Zaka and everything. And it's true, a lot of ands over here, and it's true that the coronavirus has put us in a situation where we cannot at this time accomplish any of that. So then I the conclusion is, for all those ands, the conclusion to my mind is that instead of making a pseudo tzibur, which accomplishes halakhically speaking nothing, so rather if we stop and investigate what is Davar Shebikdusha, how does it fit into the halakhos of Tfila and Tainiyot, and what are we missing when we can't have that, and a recognition of that idea, and how that recognition can fit into a plan for our tshuva, then we're accomplishing what the objective is. Yihi Ratzon. Yihi Ratzon, I would say, Yihi Ratzon is that we should all be able to take the message of the tzara and use it as a proper avoda to be able to change our lives. And then hopefully the tzara will be removed, but the real goal is to change the lives that we have because we heeded, we heard, and we acted upon the message. And yes, every single one of us can make a difference.